It's Friday. It is February 10th. Pump for the weekend. And next week, we start our position preview. So today, we're going to talk about players that we haven't really talked that much about. I've got one at each position, two outfielders, only one starting pitcher. It's Kevin Gausman. Surprise, surprise. We got a lot. We're going to talk a little bit about the World Baseball Classic. And is there any statistical evidence that playing in the WBC is bad for a hitter or a pitcher? And we also have Scott, Chris, and Heath to talk about their favorite late-round picks. Happy Friday, guys.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
Feeling good. I've got a fun stat for you. Stat of the day. I was doing some Troy Tulowitzki research last night. It seems that Troy Tulowitzki scored the same amount of fantasy points, actually half a point difference, in 2015 and 2016. But in 2015, Tulowitzki was the number 5 shortstop in fantasy. In 2016, he was number 19!
Well, that half point.
Oh, gosh. I know, half a point. That many people separate. Can you believe that?
So let's do an exercise here.
Uh-huh.
If Troy Tulowitzki scores exactly that many fantasy points again in 2017, where would you expect him to finish?
12.
Yeah. Like 12, yeah.
I think that's what I have him ranked, so we'll go with that.
Right in the middle of 5 and 19. Duh.
Obviously, what it means is shortstop was much, much, much better last year.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, actually, this is the clearest singular example I've seen of that. The D. Gordon one I keep saying is pretty good, but that's obviously for second base.
What is the D. Gordon one?
If you put 2015 D. Gordon, which was the one who won a batting title, led the majors in steals, 200 hits. You put that D. Gordon in last year's second base pool, he goes from 4th to 13th.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why I don't want D. Gordon in a points league this year. I don't see how D. Gordon gets better than he was in 2015.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And one thing I would say is that, as much as anything, I think that's an incredibly bad sign for Troy Tulowitzki and other players who, you know, maybe, like, you can look at it and say, oh, they weren't any worse in 2015 and 2016. Well, if you were the same guy in two different offensive environments, you weren't the same guy. You know, like, I was looking up Trevor Bauer's numbers last night. He had a 94 ERA plus in 2014 with a 4.18 ERA. His ERA was 4.26 last year, and he had a 110 ERA plus. He was a better than average pitcher last year with a higher ERA than he was in 2014.
So Chris was looking up Trevor Bauer. I was looking up Troy Tulowitzki. Heath and Scott, what the hell were you doing last night?
Anything with TRs?
TRs.
Troy and Trevor.
No.
Oh. Anything with Duke,
no,
Duke North Carolina?
I spent most of my time
listening to Trap Queen
last night talking about how Jay Happ and Aaron Sanchez couldn't be as good as they were last year.
What? Heath really hates the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that's not nice.
I got a fun stat for you, Adam.
Okay.
They were two of only three pitchers last year to post a ERA better than 3.2 with less than 8 strikeouts and more than 2.5 walks per 9.
You know what my question is?
Jay Happ, Aaron Sanchez, and Tanner Roark. Now, there were five pitchers that did that in 2015.
Okay.
You know how those pitchers did in 2016?
No, I'd like to know, though.
Well, their names were Shelby Miller, Sonny Gray, Marco Estrada, Scott Kazmir, and A.J. Burnett, who probably did the best of all of them.
That's pretty good
stat. Marco Estrada had a really good year.
We are dropping some really good stats here. This is good stuff.
My question is,
yes,
because I know how you do these things,
yes,
is who was at 3.21 who ruined your sample size?
Nobody.
Sure.
Nobody at all.
I mean, if we're going to prolong this, like, there were other reasons why Shelby Miller and Sonny Gray were a disaster last year than pure regression.
And also, like, they didn't regress to the mean. Like, that maybe somehow that success level with those peripherals means you're all of a sudden going to become one of the worst pitchers in baseball. But, like, I don't really, like, I just don't know how helpful that is. Yes,
no,
Sonny Gray and Shelby Miller would pitch worse, but, like, telling me that Shelby Miller and Sonny Gray did that implies something that's not really there in the data.
The
like,
point
Shelby
is,
Miller and Sonny, yes, they're regression candidates.
No, not just regression candidates. You cannot, over a long period of time, sustain a sub-3.2 ERA with less than 8 strikeouts per 9 and more than 2.5 walks per 9. Over the last 5 years, there were 2 pitchers that did it twice. Sonny Gray and Jeremy Hellickson.
Mm-hmm.
There were a ton of other pitchers that did it over the last 5 years. Almost universally, those pitchers saw
an
increase in their ERA. I'm not saying they have to have a 5 ERA.
Marco Estrada wasn't that much worse.
I mean, Marco Estrada completely changed the way that he pitched last year. Marco he started striking guys out.
Okay.
Well, Sonny Gray bounce back candidate this year. Throwing it out there.
I think that's fine. He can't be as bad as he was last year.
I think Shelby Miller is.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
Not as confident in him.
Most important thing so far is that we have said the word regression or regress 4 times already, and I think we should start keeping track of it because it's just like you can't read about baseball without seeing that word now. So we're at 4 for this episode.
Well, actually, Adam, I wrote something on sorry.
That's Chris. Here goes again.
That's Chris's thing.
Yeah, I'm sure you wrote your regression candidate story, right?
I've written 3 of them, and I've got 1 more coming out today. So, yes, there's AL hitters, NL hitters, AL pitchers, NL pitchers.
Okay. We have something much more exciting. Well, no, that's pretty exciting. Sorry. That was a bad transition.
Not, it's the most exciting.
We have
the highlight.
No, we do have something more exciting. We've got a new theme song, and it's awesome, and it will be debuting today. I will try to play it around the 30-minute mark of today's episode, so stay tuned for
it. It is fantastic.
It's amazing, but it's about 4 minutes long. It's a full song. Now, our guy, Doc Kratzer, he cut it up into 30-second intros that we'll be using throughout the season, but we will be playing the full song for you today. The world.
So are they different 30-second intros? Like we're gonna have it varied
yes,
a little bit from day to day.
He gave me like 6 or 7 of them.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I like that.
That's
good. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. I was cracking up again last night listening. So, okay. Most at bats in the last World Baseball Classic 4 years ago. I looked at the potential impact that the WBC could have on hitters and pitchers, and I don't know that we have much here, but let's knock it out anyway. Probably easier if you guys just read the notes. Most players did worse in 2013 than they did in 2012 after they played in the World Baseball Classic. But some of those players were coming off like career years.
I think that's the key, and I think you'll actually see a lot of stuff like this with like the Home Run Derby or the All-Star Game in general, where guys will play worse after making an All-Star team. And that's usually because if you get selected for an All-Star team, if you get selected for the World Baseball Classic, there's a pretty good chance that you were coming off a very good season, even by your own standards anyway.
Yeah, like Robinson Cano, he played in the WBC in 2013. Cano had a 929 OPS that went down to 899, but still a great year. Encarnacion, 941 to 904. But, you know, Alex Rios had a huge drop-off. Jimmy Rollins had a huge drop-off. Adam Jones had another great year. He had a career. Well, his OPS went down, but 33 home runs, which was a career high, 108 RBIs after the WBC. Ryan Braun played only 61 games the following year. Jose Reyes played only 93 games. Their production.
That was the year Braun got caught up in the.
What the he suspension. Also had the thumb injury, I thought too. I don't remember. I think I'm wrong about that. I think you're probably right.
All right.
Yeah, Angel Pagan played 154 games in 2012, 71 in 2013. Carlos Beltran was an all-star in 2012 and 2013, but 8 fewer home runs and he basically stopped stealing bases, but you know, he was getting older. I don't know. Do you think there's anything with the hitters? We can get to the pitchers in a second, but do you think there's anything with the hitters, playing in the World Baseball Classic?
Braun, 2013 was the year he was suspended, obviously well after the World Baseball Classic. He was playing through a thumb injury the next year, and it was his career worst year.
Oh, the next year, okay.
But back on the subject of World Baseball Classic, I understand the concern with pitchers.
And even that, and we'll talk about them in a second, but it's not that different from spring training.
Well, if they're taking it as seriously as baseball intends them to take it, like they actually care about the outcomes of the games, then yeah, it would be different from spring training. Because in spring training,
yeah,
nobody really cares about stats.
I'm not really worried about hitters participating.
Yeah, okay.
Neither am I. Other than it, you know, may expose them to more injury. but I think that's probably overblown.
Okay. And most innings pitched in the World Baseball Classic in 2013 was 15 by Kenta Maeda. These pitchers, especially the Major League Baseball ones, I don't think they're going to be pitching all that much. Chin-Ming Wong pitched a lot, but he was 2013 was, I think, his last year until last season. He was done at that point. Edinson Volquez had a terrible season in 2013 after the World Baseball Classic. Ryan Vogelsong had a terrible season. And R.A. Dickey, he won the Cy Young in 2012. He had a 4.21 ERA after the World Baseball Classic, but that was, of course, his first year in Toronto. But he had three really good seasons before that. So we got Volquez, Vogelsong, and Dickey. And there weren't that many pitchers that actually threw enough innings to matter. And I don't even know that they
right,
did.
That's the thing with me is that, like, you're talking maybe 150 extra pitches for some guys. If there's a concern, it's just that they're throwing potentially harder in a competitive environment than they would in the spring. But the amount that they're throwing is so small that it's really hard for me to get worried about it.
It's also the routine. You know, these guys are creatures of habit, and this is obviously not part of their habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, veteran pitchers in spring training typically work pitches in like one at a time.
Yeah.
They're not using their full arsenal from the get-go, which is not something you do in a competitive environment.
Yeah.
So I could see how it makes a difference. I just don't think we have enough evidence that it really does make
okay.
a difference.
Okay, useless segment then. Also, I want to thank not only Doc Kratzer, but I have to mention Dave Scaff, who also helped out with our theme song, which you will hear shortly. Some news and notes for you. Scott Boras was on the mic yesterday, and he said that Bryce Harper played through an issue last year, a physical issue that annoyed him. I don't remember exactly what he said, but we know that. But Harper, pre-All-Star break, batted 256, 399 on base, 491 slugging. Not incredible numbers except the OBP, but 19 home runs and 13 steals before the All-Star break, 5 home runs and 8 steals in 61 games, and a 226 batting average after the All-Star break. But we know, it had to be injury related with Bryce Harper, right? There were the reports, you know, it was like a shoulder issue or a back issue or a neck issue, whatever it was. And,
mm-hmm.
that had to be the problem.
He had some injury issues. He had some bad luck issues. He's going to be better, I think, this year than he was last year.
Well, you remember he sat for like a week in August, and then the next 2 to 3 weeks after that was his best stretch by far since April. And then he kind of cooled off again after that. So I think like that is even further evidence that he just wasn't right physically, which is would have been fair to assume anyway.
Okay. Scott Boras also said that Matt Wieters lacerated his forearm in November. It was pretty serious, I guess, and that might be why he is not signed yet. And Chris Towers, are you going to dance in the streets if the Marlins are sold, if Jeffrey Loria sells the Marlins?
As currently reported, I don't think there's all that much to be excited about.
Okay.
He's alone in Marlins fans in thinking this, right?
Yes. No, I've talked to a couple of others who have the same concerns.
You're in the minority.
Because because I don't think most people are thinking it through, and it's just...
my opinion's right.
Well, because, no, we just... We view Jeffrey Loria as just a uniquely evil person who's trying... No, that, like,
evil.
That is... No, no, that's the way people view him. Like, that he
okay,
is uniquely...
People have to attach morality to
attacking...
Things.
He is uniquely running the Marlins in a malicious way. And it's really just that, like, the reality of it is that he's not a particularly wealthy person among sports owners. And so he can't afford to go into debt to finance, to build a team that can spend a lot of money.
Chris and I got in a pretty big argument about this yesterday, and yeah. I'm not even the Marlins fan. I just feel I wasn't trying to make Loria out as evil, just
incompetent.
Incompetent. Too hands-on, not hiring the right people. And I think a new owner could make a difference.
But if it's an owner that has to use a bunch of debt to buy the team and then use the team's profits
I'm not even talking about money. I'm talking about new decision makers. Because I think decision makers
are the most influential characters
in sports.
But
there's multiple problems with the Marlins. This might solve one of them.
Maybe.
But it might not solve another one.
Yeah. I think the biggest issue with the Marlins is the fact that they are Pennywise and Pound Foolish. They continuously make short-sighted moves that will increase their chances of winning in the short term while also making sure that they can continue turning a profit. As long as that's the case, as long as the profit motive is what drives them primarily, it's going to be hard to be a competitive major league franchise.
Do you feel like there's a worse owner in baseball, than Jeffrey Loria?
No.
Then I don't see how this can be anything but good news.
Well, I mean, there are other people who could be worse owners in the world.
Well, it's going to be hard. And it's not just him. Their president, David Sampson, is the one who's really reviled, I think.
But my thing is if the, as reported, the owner, the prospective owner has to take on a huge amount of debt in order to finance the sale of the team or the purchase of the team, he's likely going to continue to be motivated by many of the same impulses that Loria is with regards to profit motives. And, it's really hard to run a successful major league franchise on the field if that is your only concern. That's all.
I just think money's become overrated in baseball. There's been so much parity in baseball.
That's fine. Lately. There's a reason Theo Epstein went from the Red Sox to the Cubs and not the Red Sox to the Reds.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, the Cubs, that was a beautiful situation he was walking into.
Right, because they can spend as much money as God.
They also had a great farm system. They were bringing up great players, and they had been tanking.
Put together the farm system.
No,
he didn't have farm systems.
Put together the whole thing. I mean,
Theo Epstein's a smart guy. There's a reason the guy from the Dodgers, whose name escapes me, left the Rays to go to the Dodgers.
I mean,
these are smart people.
Friedman.
Smart people understand
how
much.
To go to the World Series in the American League or the Royals and the Indians.
Okay. The Indians spent like $140 million on their payroll.
I'm not saying money doesn't make things easier. Yeah, I'm sure Andrew Friedman was thrilled to come into money, but he came into money because he was so successful without money as a good decision maker. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Can be.
All right. Let's talk fantasy baseball here. And no. Also, win totals are out, by the way. So, you know, that's cool. If you want
Beautiful.
To. You want to know the Braves win total over under 71.5 wins.
Scott White, over.
I will take the over on that. If I was a betting man, that would sound like the kind of bet I'd make.
The Marlins, 77.5 wins.
Chris Towers?
Yeah, it seems like a perfectly fine over under.
You have to say over or under. You cannot say that.
Well, Pecota has them for 78, so I'll take the over.
You just made me sick. Kansas City, 80, 80.5 for Kansas City.
I think it's fair, but I'd take the over.
And the Yankees, 83.5.
Probably 10 games under.
I think this is going to be a terrible year for them. It's going to be their worst year in 20 years.
Those are the types of teams you always bet against the Yankees in these types of things. Because they have to prop their totals up by just a little bit because there's so many more Yankees fans that are just going to bet on their team no matter what the number is.
Okay, I'll take the under. All right, Twitter poll. Why am I doing all these non-fantasy baseball things? All
right,
real quick.
Right? Like you're like terrible. Condescending to me about how we need to talk about fantasy baseball?
Yeah, I know. What's wrong with me? We'll do the Twitter poll later. Let's talk fantasy baseball. Players that we have not talked about enough. I know I'm going to forget to do the Twitter poll anyway, but it's useless. Yasmani Grandal. I did one at each position, except two outfielders. Yasmani Grandal, we haven't talked a lot about him, but Grandal was the number 9 catcher in points leagues, number 6 in Roto last year, and he had the fewest at-bats of any catcher in the top 14 in points leagues and top 12 in Roto. So, on a per game or per at-bat basis, I'm guessing Grandal was one of the best. He also had a 249 ISO. Only hit 228, but 27 home runs.
I can tell you exactly what he was.
Okay.
And let's not forget that before his shoulder injury in 2015, he was also one of the best catchers in baseball.
Oh, yeah. So in 2015, Grandal was hitting 295, 400 on base, 512 slugging percentage. That's like that's a good outfielder. On August 4th, in his last 32 games, he was so bad. 0.72 batting average with 2 extra base hits in 32 games to really sink his numbers. But, you know, look, his batting average is always bad. I don't really get it. His walk-to-strikeout ratio is much better. And I just feel like if he can put it together for a full season, Yasmani Grandal could be a major
I think Yasmani Grandal is super underrated in fantasy. I think he's a catcher who can absolutely be a difference maker, and there aren't a lot of those. I I think he's the fifth or sixth best catcher.
I feel like he plays. I know catchers obviously sit at least every fifth day. I feel like he sits consistently less, consistently more often than that. Hey, how many at bats did he have last year?
He had 457 plate appearances. He appeared in 126 games. That's a little lower.
The 457 was a career high too.
Sure. It was.
Yeah.
Barely. He's been right around 430 to 457 over the last three.
I think it's probably you project him for 430 to 450.
Yeah. And I would project him for 18 homers and good run and RBI totals for a catcher. I just think
I can't find my stats folder.
Yeah, it's okay. I think he's a very solid top 10 catcher. I'm not as excited about him as Chris is. He's for me more somebody. I mean, the nice thing is, if you don't take a catcher early, it's very nice to get Yasmani Grandal late. I didn't want to really spend anything on the position. I'll take Yasmani Grandal.
Now, would you take Grandal or Wilson Contreras?
Contreras.
Me too.
But at their current ADPs, with Grandal going 151st and Contreras going 100, I'd probably rather just wait on Grandal. And that's what I usually do. I'm usually content to grab Grandal in the 12th or 13th round, and I think that's great value for him.
I got it, Adam. I got it. The catchers who ranked ahead of Yasmani Grandal in head-to-head points per game last year with a relevant number of at-bats. Gary Sanchez, Buster Posey, Wilson Ramos, Jonathan Lucroy, Evan Gattis, Wilson Contreras.
Really?
And that's it. So I think he's seventh. Okay. And Wilson Contreras, it was like pretty much dead even. He beat him by 1,000th of a point.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Let's go on to a first baseman that we haven't spoken that much about, Jose Abreu. He was number 12 in points leagues. Abreu was number 15 in Roto. And 25 home runs, 100 RBIs. He has driven in 100 runs in all three of his MLB seasons. But the home runs, you know, only 25. Yeah, what do you think? I'm not going to talk that much about Abreu. What do you guys think about Jose Abreu? Could he get, because I took him at the end of the second round, I remember, in our podcast league last year. Could he get back to being that type of player, Jose Abreu?
Yeah, he could.
Yeah. It's really, I don't think he's going to be a 36 homer guy again. He right. could be a 30 homer guy again. I feel like he's kind of in the same category of what I just said about Grandal. Like, I don't have a problem with Jose Abreu being on my team. He's a nice security blanket. I think I just took him in our head-to-head categories draft that if you don't spend on a first baseman, as long as Abreu doesn't go too early, you can just take him late.
Well, I just don't
get as excited about it.
Well, the Abreu who hit .317 with 36 home runs as a rookie was like an eighth overall pick the following year. So,
right.
But in terms of him becoming just even a second round pick, like, I think the odds are against him because the standard for what a second round pick has changed just in that one year. In the one year where he had kind of the first half slump, it's changed enough that I think maybe, like, what I expect Freddie Freeman to be this year is better than what Jose Abreu was in 2015 when he hit .290 with 30 home runs.
Would you rather have...
I don't agree on Freddie Freeman.
Okay. Well, would you rather have Freddie Freeman in, you know, late round three, maybe early round four, or Jose Abreu in round eight?
Abreu.
Yeah.
Abreu.
Yeah, Abreu could give you some really good value. All right, let's go to a second baseman. We had an email from Gary in New York. Does Rougned Odor have second round potential, and how do you rate his 2016 performance compared to expectation? Let's just answer the first part of that. Does Rougned Odor, who his 33 home runs in 2016 were the most ever by a second baseman his age or younger, does he have second round potential? I will say that Odor was only the number 11 second baseman in points leagues last year because, you know, he walked 19 times and struck out 135 times. In Roto, Odor was seventh at second base. Second round potential for Odor, guys.
This is a really weird situation because Rougned Odor, Valentine's Day coming up. On Valentine's Day last year, I picked him as my player I loved, and he became the youngest second baseman ever to hit 33 home runs. It seemed like a great success, but I was disappointed in the way the season played out because in more at-bats, he walked fewer times, and I don't think, like, I don't see how he gets any better from here if he doesn't start walking more. And I don't know that you can predict him to start walking more, because when somebody walks that little, it's pretty rare that they become even.
I'm going to make a counter argument, I guess. And I, of course, love the second part of this guy's question, because it's asking about how he did compared to expectations. I think it's unfair to say he was a disappointment.
He disappointed me personally. Right. I don't think he was a disappointment to the world at large.
He was a 22-year-old that hit 33 home runs.
Well, even
and there's no reason to expect that he can't. Like, he had, as a rookie, in 470 plate appearances, a 5% walk rate and only a 17% strikeout rate. If he shows the type of power he showed last year and even has that much of a change, it's going to make a big difference.
And I would just say, we don't even have to talk about his age. He was a second baseman who hit 33 home runs, had 89 runs, 88 RBI, 14 steals, and hit 271. Mm-hmm. Batting average isn't great, but it's pretty average, and he was extremely helpful in the four other categories. That's a really good player. Maybe our if that's a disappointment, then our expectations were just unfair.
Well,
my
expectations, like, may have been unfair. He was the player I loved last year.
Yeah, but that,
how much better does he get from here is my point. He's basically the Adam Jones of second baseman. And while Adam Jones used to be a second round player, it was when the offensive context of the game was different. And I think a lot of us felt like he was a reach in the second round at the time. Like, Odor has become that. And that's a fine player. I mean, anybody who drafts him will start him.
Well, I guess my question is, if he hits 33 home runs with the walk rate and strikeout rate from his rookie year, he's a lot better.
How many walks would that translate to in a 150-game season like he had last year?
5% of 632?
It would be fewer than 632, because
he had 150 games last year and had 632 plate appearances.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
it would be around 36.
35. So it's still really low.
Well, that's Daniel Murphy.
A lot of times when players become like middle of the order threats, their walk rate goes up just because pitchers learn to pitch around them. Like Matt Holliday is a good example of that. He was not a great walk guy early in his career, but he wasn't a horrendous walk player. Like, I feel like that's hard to overcome. And I feel like it severely limits Odor's upside, because it's harder for him to score runs. I think when you're that impatient, pitchers can exploit it, and it keeps the batting average down.
Yeah, but why can't he improve? I mean,
I also
Odor's
don't
23.
Understand. Like, we don't have this conversation about Starling Marte, right?
Whenever we talk about points leagues, we do. But Starling Marte is like a freak in terms of hitting, his ability to hit 300 and better consistently.
Well, Jose Abreu has a pretty bad walk to strikeout ratio, and not like Odor, but he hits 290 every year.
Like, there's Jose Abreu. Yeah, I mean, it's, well, A, we were dismissing him as a second round choice.
No. We're not taking Odor as a second rounder, but I don't know. It's like, I think, first of all, there are some older second basemen that might not do as well as they did last year. And Odor could do better. He could do better. I mean, he could easily get back to his previous walk rate. He just was terrible at it last year.
I
could see him getting more at bats too, because I could see them pushing him further up in the order.
And I just don't know how much that, like, I'm not really looking at him and saying, well, if he only walks 3.6% of the time versus 4, like, he's not going to walk much.
And that limits his ceiling.
It probably limits his ceiling in a head-to-head points league, but
it
in a category
ceiling overall.
I don't know.
I don't agree.
He's pretty
damn good.
If you're
not getting, he reached base. His on-base percentage last year was .296.
And still,
you're not scoring many runs.
He scored 89 runs.
89 runs is not good enough for a second rounder.
No, but okay, that's fine. I think all of us are in agreement that Rougned Odor is almost certainly not going to be a second rounder.
But the question was, does he have second round potential?
He's being drafted as
the walk rate comes back.
He's
he does.
Being drafted as a fifth rounder, right?
Yeah, fourth, fifth.
Like,
yeah.
I have him 52nd.
No, and that's fine. That's fine. That I don't. I was just answering the question, I guess. I wasn't assessing whether or not Rougned Odor is a good desirable.
He definitely
player.
Has second round potential, but you should not draft him in the second round.
Man, I know we do players that we love, but now apparently we do players that we hate.
I don't hate Rougned Odor. Stop twisting my words.
Scott is making me really uncomfortable how much you hate Rougned
Odor. I'm just going to go back and read where expectations too high for Rougned Odor.
Troy Tulowitzki is our shortstop.
But even, no, they weren't.
They, Scott's were.
Mine were. Mine were.
He was a consensus. He was a top five second baseman consensus at CBS Sports. He did not finish in the top five in either format.
Troy Tulowitzki is our shortstop. He was 19th in points. He was 16th in Roto. Already gave out the stat. He was fifth in both formats in 2015, and he had very similar years. Sort of. But same amount of fantasy points. Different ways of getting there. So Tulo did hit 24 home runs. And I still look at him when he gets into the batter's box, and because he is so imposing, I still feel like Tulowitzki is going to hit a home run every time he steps up, but it just doesn't happen very often. He only batted 254. And, you know, Chris, I think you were the first one that was really honest with Tulowitzki. He's just not that good outside of Coors Field. Is there any hope that he regains some old form?
I think it's a lot. He's what, 31?
Two, yeah, 32.
I think it's less about, like, he's not good outside of Coors Field. It's just like, he's a 32-year-old. He's lost a little bat speed, and you saw it actually in 2015, early in that season. His swing rate was increasing, and it seemed like he was kind of cheating to try to catch up to pitches, and that's what happens when you get into your 30s, and that fall can be pretty precipitous when it comes to guys in their 30s. And for Tulowitzki, you know, he left Coors Field. Like, that's Coors Field's always going to mask things.
It exacerbated what was already beginning to happen, because in Colorado, before the trade even happened, it was an amazing stat. Through May 18th, so through 33 games, he had walked twice.
Yeah.
That year. And that improved a little before he got traded, but it's just hard to know how much of this you can put on the Coors effect because of age and because of how many injuries he had suffered up to in his career up to that point.
And the slide was evident before leaving Coors. He only had an 818 OPS with Colorado. Even accounting for Coors, that's extremely low for a player of his established caliber.
He's not getting back to top five though, but I still think he's got a good shot of being top 10 this year.
All right, so let's do this since we have a lot to get to. Chris wanted to talk about advanced stats, so we'll allot some time for
that. No, we'll pass on that. No, it's fine.
Whatever. I want to get to emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We still have to get to our new theme song, which I think people actually really do want to hear, and they should want to hear it. So I'm going to give you a player, a third baseman, two outfielders, and a starting pitcher. I want one of you to give me a best case scenario and one of you to give me a worst case scenario. Todd Frazier is our third baseman. Frazier's 30 years old. He has averaged 0.72 fantasy points per plate appearance two straight years, but that wasn't good enough. He fell from fifth at third base in 2015 to 10th last year in points and 7th in Roto, but did hit 40 home runs with the 225 average. Todd Frazier, Heath, what's his best case scenario?
All I wanted to do is worst case scenario.
Todd Frazier,
best case scenario.
No, you want it? You got it. Worst case scenario.
His worst case scenario is that his increased strikeout rate from last year continues to balloon. His BABIP doesn't bounce back as much as maybe his career norm says that it should, and he's still a 240, 250 BABIP guy, but he has a bad year in terms of home run to fly ball rate, which would just be going back to maybe like his career mark. Let's say he's at 15% home run to fly ball rate. That's going to be pretty bad. Like, he could be a 30 homer guy that's hitting 230.
Yeah,
and
that's not good.
In a not very good lineup, doesn't drive in very many runs, and he's old, so he doesn't run as much.
You know, man, you have no imagination. That's your worst case scenario? He hits better than he hit last year?
I think he's a 40 homer guy at 225 last
year.
He gave
him a 230 batting average. He was worse than that last. Oh, BABIP.
No, I said 230 batting average.
Yeah, there's a worse worst case scenario.
No, he had a 236 BABIP last year.
I think his...
it's not getting worse than that. But a 230 with 30 home runs sucks.
He is relatively safe in that I think it's hard to see him, like, he's not going to hit 18 home runs.
It's
next
Todd
year.
Frazier we're talking about here.
Probably.
And,
but, like, his realistic worst case scenario is probably, like, Adam Duvall.
All right, Scott, I'm trying to speed this up, guys. So, Scott, give me your best case scenario.
It's just so interesting. This player is so interesting because his BABIP was insanely low last year, but he will be a low BABIP guy because he hits so many fly balls.
And
but
so many infield fly balls.
I think it was just way too low. So best case scenario, I'll give him like you know, maybe he approaches 270 with the batting average and he hits 45 home runs.
Oh, that's a nice best case for Todd Frazier. Okay, Scott, give me the best case scenario for David Dahl.
David Dahl, the best case scenario is that he wins the job, plays every day, and hits, like, I'm gonna say 320-20. I think that's within reach for him, playing half his games at Coors Field.
Okay, and worst
just
case...
Just 20 home runs? You have no imagination. Playing at Coors Field!
At least it was better than what he contributed last year.
Well, not over... No! It's worse than his home run rate from last year. If he plays a full season.
I didn't think his home run rate was that great.
He hit 25 homers in 155 games between the majors and the minors.
He hit seven home runs in 63 games last year for David Dahl. So, yeah 20 would be nice. And five steals and five
translates
attempts.
Translates perfectly.
Also, he hit well. He did not hit for any power, but he hit 313 against lefties. Only two extra base hits. And he did well. He hit very well on the road. 291 with a 500 slugging. What's the worst case scenario, Chris, for David Dahl?
He's a platoon player who plays... Well, actually, the worst case scenario, he's in AAA.
All right, his
worst
major league.
Case scenario of him in the majors is he's a platoon guy who hits an empty batting average.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't hit not a lot of power and okay. Heath, Carlos Gonzalez, you want best or worst?
Let's go worst.
Okay. So Heath.
Yeah.
Heath, Gonzalez has been the number 16 outfielder in points and number 12 in Roto two straight years. So give me his worst case scenario.
The worst case scenario is he gets traded to a really bad ballpark and struggles for half of a season and then gets hurt again and everybody has to cut him.
Yeah, like Oakland trades for him or something.
Oakland or the Royals or the Braves or something like that.
Best case scenario, Chris.
He does exactly what he's done the last two seasons. I'm not even going to be creative. I don't need to.
You don't think he's got a lot more? You think he's, you know, top 15 outfielders basically, Gonzalez?
I mean, I could see him being a top 10, top 5 outfielder, just if he has like one of those random 310 huge BABIP seasons in Coors and, you know, basically combines the batting average skills from the batting average results from 2016 with the power results of 2015.
Okay. And finally, Scott, Kevin Gausman, after the All-Star break, Kevin Gausman had a 310 ERA, struck out a batter per inning. He had two bad starts against Toronto and one bad start against Boston in that stretch. So the division is tough, but maybe not as tough with Encarnacion out. What's your best case scenario for Kevin Gausman?
Kevin Gausman has a little better BABIP luck, maybe takes another little step forward with the strikeout rate so that he's over one per inning. And gets the innings up to near 200.
Gets the Chris Tillman win luck?
Gets the Chris Tillman win luck, sure, because the Orioles are going to score a lot of runs and ends up being a fringe Cy Young candidate.
Whoa!
I'm talking, you know, somebody who finishes like 8th or 9th in voting. I'm not talking...
Okay.
Like somebody who actually wins it.
Okay, so like an all-star.
It has what we would call a breakout season. Okay. I think it's... I'm not betting on that scenario, but I think it's within the realm of possibility.
And Heath, worst case?
His BABIP luck gets worse. He gives up like 35 dongs and he wins 9 games with a 4.5 ERA.
Hey, speaking of dongs, I think it's time to hear our new theme song. So Doc Kratzer, who wrote the Kokomo theme song last year, produced it, recorded it, did all that stuff. He is awesome. Got some help this year from Dave Scaff. They put together, a collection of inside jokes, baseball jokes, and real lyrics from the song. Keeping the baseball references in the song. Here is the new Fantasy Baseball Today 2017 theme song.
throwing knuckleballs. Heath is now the oldest host. Scott likes using GIFs the most. Adam loves ERA and auto-tunes himself this way. Paxton's regression screams. Brooklyn's got a winning team. Liam Hendricks, Brad Hand. Mike Trout plays near Disneyland. Stats from spring training. Daily play. Is it raining? What's the ceiling? Bank on ceiling. Can I get a...
It's the best thing ever. When we first heard it, we all decided to listen to it together. We synchronized our watches, and I was just sitting at my desk giggling for minutes.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure I've completely unpacked the greatness of it. Like, every time I hear it, there's something
I'm still
new
stuck on Shoemaker Schumacher.
Schumacher. North Korea, South Korea. Like, the way he synced it up with the real, like, you know, it's Weird Al level parody there.
Yeah, it really is. Sam Dyson in a vacuum is my favorite line.
Yeah, that's a good one. And the Fooled You.
Fooled You. Oh, Fooled You's got to come back this year, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fooled You is the best thing we've ever done.
Fooled You. Awesome.
No, it's not.
So listen, I want to thank those guys again, Doc and Dave, amazing stuff. And, you're going to be hearing, different intros, throughout the season, throughout the, you know, preseason, regular season. And I don't know, we'll have some fun with it. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. It's pretty sweet. And those guys obviously put a lot of time into it. So, with that said, we'll finish off with some emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. First though, real quick, give me your favorite late round hitter and your favorite late round pitcher. Scott, let's start with you. Favorite late round hitter.
My favorite late round hitter. All right, I'm probably going to go later than Heath and Chris will. So late that borderline not getting drafted.
I like this guy so much, I'm not going to draft him.
There's just no reason to draft
Heath,
Mitch Haniger in a three outfielder league.
Heath is crazy on this one. I support you, Scott. Team Scam.
Like, what do you mean?
Because he's just, we can't always do 12-team mixed leagues.
If it's your favorite guy, then you should draft him.
Maybe Scott will. He'll put him on his bench.
No, because that's just not smart playing.
Then you don't like him that much.
You do like him that much. You don't go out on a limb that nobody else is even towing, though. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, if it's your last round pick, someone you're going to drop almost certainly at some point anyway, so.
Why not just pick your favorite guy?
You have more time to make up your mind about that. Whatever. You guys are being silly.
Scott, you don't have to listen to this, because this is the guy who told us he was going to draft Travis Shaw, and then he said, there were too many good players, and I couldn't draft Travis Shaw. So you don't have to take that abuse from him.
Exactly. I'm sure if Travis Shaw homers on opening day, he will put in the highest bid for him and still end up with him.
Yes.
So
I'm going to pick Mitch Haniger with the last pick of every draft now.
I feel like a big part of playing fantasy is taking advantage of what your opponents are going to do and what they're not going to do. And I'm confident my opponents are not going to draft Mitch Haniger in a three outfield.
We are now.
Mitch Haniger had a 999 OPS in the minors last year. He was a top prospect for the Brewers in the low minors before he really had a chance to enter main circulation, like national circulation for prospects, and struggled his first few years down there. Tweaked his swing a couple years ago, modeled it after A.J. Pollock and Josh Donaldson, and then took off. Diamondbacks traded him in the along with Gene Segura to the Mariners, and since that trade, Jerry DePoto, the Mariners GM, just won't shut up about him. He is completely in love with Mitch Haniger.
Oh. He's the only player he hasn't traded.
And he loves him more than Scott because he actually picked him.
Yeah. Look, I own Mitch Haniger in two 2014 leagues, so don't go that.
So he's your favorite very late round pick.
I'm just saying.
No, Scott, you would probably take him in a five outfielder league with 30 rounds where we have seven reserve spots.
Yeah, as a five outfielder league bench player, maybe even as a five outfielder league my fifth outfielder, it's possible. It hasn't happened yet, but we've only done two such drafts. So, I think good play discipline, good power, some speed, a good defender. He's going to play every day, provided he doesn't fall flat on his face this spring, and I think he will surprise a lot of people.
We love you, Mitch Haniger. Okay, Heath, your favorite hitter, late round hitter.
Scott told me my pick was not late enough. So can you define late round hitter, average draft position?
Round 40 or later in a 16-team draft.
Round 40 or later, I'm going to say Christian Colon. No. I was going to say Odubel Herrera. And this is an interesting one because he is being drafted much later in our drafts than he is in the industry. I can get him pretty much whenever I want him in our drafts because nobody else will take him. industry-wide, he's going in like the 13th or 14th round, I think.
Hmm. Interesting.
But he, in roto leagues, he'll give you a good source of steals. I think he's going to score some runs. He's going to have a nice batting average. He's not a bad player in points either. He's not going to lead the league in walks, and that's what everybody says. What he did in April wasn't real, but just look at his full season numbers. He was good.
Okay, Odubel Herrera. Chris, your favorite late-round hitter?
I'm going to change mine. I said one earlier, but I'm going to change it. I'm going to go with Jock Peterson. This is a guy that I love.
Jock Peterson,
exactly. I said it the same way. No, you look at Jock Peterson. I know there are concerns about him playing every day. There are concerns about him being a platoon player. I feel like the Dodgers should give him a chance to hit lefties. I don't know if they will.
But he's already proven it.
But you know what? He's coming off an 847 OPS as a 23-year-old. He's really good. He's a great power hitter. He's got a great eye at the plate. I still think there is the chance that Jock Peterson develops into an absolute star. We're talking about a 24-year-old right now who, 25 and 26 home runs in his first two major league seasons. He walks a ton. If he can get that strikeout rate to the 25% mark, all of a sudden you're probably looking at a guy who hits 270.
I don't think you're wrong. I just, when you're the Dodgers,
mm-hmm.
and it's time to fill out your lineup card today, and you're facing a left-handed pitcher, and you have Enrique Hernandez that mm-hmm. you know posts like an 850, 900 OPS against mm-hmm. lefties, and you have Jock Peterson that's never hit lefties.
Sure.
Why do you play Jock Peterson?
You may not. But there's a chance that Jock Peterson just forces their hand and is so good that they can't keep him out of the lineup anymore.
Or for development's sake, I mean, if they're secure in their standing, I don't know if they will be.
One of the elite prospects in all of baseball 2 years ago, I think giving up, maybe they'll give up on his development already.
But For the Dodgers specifically, it doesn't even to me seem like giving up on his development. I mean, they sit Adrian Gonzalez against lefties half the time.
And if Jock Peterson sits against lefties half the time, that's a big difference than sitting against them every time. Jock Peterson's a better hitter than Adrian Gonzalez these days.
All right, so let's do our favorite late-round pitcher. By the way, Chris, you get the Jock Peterson thing, right? You got my Jock Peterson.
Yeah, no, I can't do that voice.
Oh, you can't do it.
Jock Peterson.
Jock Peterson.
This is Jock Peterson.
No, you just did it. Just add a little oomph for it from your diaphragm.
I don't want to do
Fine.
Do it again. I don't have a diaphragm.
One more time.
I don't know what that is. Please don't put me on the spot like this.
You did it really well if you just add a little oomph to it.
I have a demand.
Jock Peterson.
I have a demand. That was terrible. I have a demand for you. I just want a name. No explanation, just a name. Favorite late round pitcher. Chris, you can start.
Well, Jose De Leon.
Heath.
I forgot who I said I was going to say.
Jesus.
You said Carlos Rodon to me.
Carlos Rodon,
which seems too
early. Not late. That is not a late round pick. Scott, give me a real late round pick.
Brandon Finnegan.
Never going to draft him.
I just did in the mock we did.
And I'll take Junior.
Yeah, but it was just a mock.
No, Eduardo Rodriguez. That's my guy. Okay. Emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's start with Mike from Rockaway. He says, hey, Joey, Tommy, Dee Dee, and Tommy. Yeah. Are those the Ramones?
Rock, rock, Rockaway Beach.
Oh.
It's a Ramones song.
Oh, it is? Okay.
You'll sing a song nobody's never heard of, but you won't use the Jock Peterson
voice. It's the Ramones!
I'm thinking of joining a one-league-only league, like AL-only or NL-only. Besides the obvious depth issues, what do you feel the major differences are compared to a mixed league, and do you recommend using the league that your favorite team is in, like an AL-only league as a Yankees fan, or use the other?
I find you have to play it much safer in these leagues because there's not fallback options on the waiver wire. Like, if a player goes bad, there's not much you can do about it other than make a disadvantageous trade. So I tend to play it safer. Like, in an auction scenario, I wouldn't go studs and duds. I would keep my dollars more centralized.
I think that Scott's approach is probably more correct. I generally think of it the other way around. Not saying that it's mathematically going to win as many times, but I'm shooting for the moon because it's really hard to grind it out in these leagues too. Like, if you're average, it's hard to be anything but average.
Also, you should try to get into a league with people who are fans of a specific team. Heath and I, Scott, are you in that one?
No.
We're in an NL-only league with a bunch of Cardinals fans, and there's nothing better than just nominating Cardinals players.
The entire auction, I nominated Cardinals players.
That's awesome. Okay, thanks for the question, Mike. Let's go
well, to... Do we want to answer a second question? He's a Yankees fan. Should he do AL-only or NL?
You should do AL-only.
Yeah, the league you're most comfortable with, most knowledgeable of the player base, which would probably be the one you're a fan of, yeah.
The hitters suck in NL, so do AL. You got DHs. Makes a big difference. And also, don't do them, because these leagues are terrible. So, Josh says, dear Paul, Anthony, and Miguel, is third base the new first base? So far in my 2017 mocks, I've often had to decide whether to wait on first or wait on third. Like, would you rather have, let's say, Donaldson, Bryant, and Arenado, one of those three, and either Carlos Santana and Hanley Ramirez, or take a first-round first baseman like Goldschmidt or Rizzo or Miggy, and Rendon or Bregman? Well, how would you guys prefer to construct your team? Elite third baseman or elite first baseman and a little bit weaker at the other position?
I would definitely rather have the choice of the elite third baseman and decent first baseman that he's offering. But the decent third baseman he's offering are probably going to go 5 to 6 rounds later.
Right.
I would really like to get Donaldson, Bryant, or Arenado and Votto.
Well, that's not enough.
Yeah,
that wasn't a choice.
That's a very there's a chance that happens, but it's pretty risky.
What? That's your first and second round pick.
Right.
Okay. Oh, so you're saying you don't like either of these options.
Like, if I have to choose, like, I'm taking Donaldson, Bryant, and Arenado ahead of the first baseman. So I guess that's what I'm choosing.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah. I mean, getting to his, like, is third base the new first base? I haven't heard it
phrased that way, I think that makes sense, though. Third base, I think, is the top heaviest position and the deepest position this year. So
but
it's
I
much
think
like we used to think of first base.
It ebbs and flows. I think the top three at third base is clearly better. But I think like the 4 through 11 at first base is probably still better.
Wait, the top and, 3 at third base is better?
Yes.
Yeah. I let me say, I think in a points league, I will take Goldschmidt over Chris Bryant. And I think in any league, I'm going to consider taking Goldschmidt over Josh Donaldson. Am I crazy?
I would take Goldschmidt over both in both formats.
Oh, you would? Okay. So I'm not crazy.
I think
but then I would take Donaldson and Bryant would both be ahead of Rizzo.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. All right. But look, it's kind of like user's choice. But it does seem like those third basemen are probably going to go ahead of not all of them every time, but just general ADP of averaging the top three third baseman is going to be higher than the top three first baseman for sure. Next email is from Greg in Massachusetts. Can you help settle a league dispute? We're a 12-team head-to-head categories league with 4 keepers. There's been a discussion as to whether or not we should be allowed to make preseason trades involving potential keepers and draft picks. Where do you stand on the argument? Should a manager be able to trade away a player that another team can keep in order to improve his or her draft position for the year?
I don't know that there's a necessary right answer to this. My preferred answer is that you can trade keepers and draft picks with the caveat that you must declare your keepers first. You can't have 6 guys that you want to keep and trade 2 of them and then keep the other 4. You've got to say, these are my 4 keepers. All keepers have been decided by everyone. Now you can trade keepers and draft picks.
Oh, I think you should be able to trade. If there's a player that you're not going to or can't keep and someone else wants him, I think you should be able to.
That's another way to do it.
Trade him, but the person acquiring keeper has to keep that player.
I don't know why you have to set those rules at all.
Just let people do what they want?
Yeah.
Everybody just trade whenever they want? Is that the way that it is in your...
No, I don't like off-season trading.
So you make a rule just banning all of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the reason I don't is because you get these overactive owners who will, trade away all their long-term chips and go for it right now, and then trade away all their excess for more long-term chips. And that just seems like a wild goose chase. I don't really enjoy that. But if you're going to allow any off-season trading, I think it just needs to be unrestricted off-season trading.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, if you make a trade for a keeper and then decide you don't want to keep that person, the other person just got something for free. I don't like
that
for the league as a whole.
Okay, but...
Like, I think you're locked into that keeper once you trade for it.
But why? Why should... Like you made a mistake, but I don't
because
see why...
Because it's bad...
I don't...
Because the commissioner and the rules should do things that are best for the league as a whole.
I think best for the league as a whole is allow people to make mistakes.
Well, you actually think best for the league as a whole is don't allow any trades in the offseason.
That's what I think is best, but I don't want to force that sensibility on Greg and his league here.
Okay. Next email is from an optimistic Astros fan. He says, "Dear Casey Jones, Negan, Joaquin Phoenix from Signs, and the Bear Jew."
Wow, these are used bats as weapons.
Cool.
Look, isn't Casey Jones? Isn't this like a cricket stick or something?
He uses like a hockey stick.
Several sports tools. He uses a bat. Certainly in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, he used a bat because Raphael grabbed it and said, Jose Canseco bat? Tell me, you didn't pay money for this.
Nice. All right. Do any of you play The Show for PlayStation? Its most common complaint is that it's too realistic as far as being closer to real baseball instead of an NBA Jam-style hyperbolic video game. With that said, do you give any credence to the player stats that the game posits to each player? I figure these player attributes are pretty close to their statistics/hot zone/season numbers. It's kind of interesting. Should we just go on MLB The Show and do our projections based off of that, guys?
I think that if you are somebody that plays that game and has that game and you want to use those projections as part of your draft prep, those are valid projections. They get paid money to try to create players that are as realistic as possible. They're doing research just like we are and just like mostly it's computer systems. But I think it's valid. Yes.
Interesting.
It's not like I wouldn't like draft solely based on that.
So why don't we do fantasy baseball? Why don't we just do like an MLB The Show league and play each other?
That would be Let's do that.
I am in a league, a simulator league. The simulation system is Diamond Mind. It's one of the most active leagues I'm in, yes. It's not as good as fantasy because it's fictional stats as opposed to real stats.
But it would be kind of fun to do an MLB The Show league.
It would be.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the show specifically, so I can't vouch for its dependability, maybe.
It's the best current video game. It's no MVP Baseball 2004.
RBI Baseball.
But it's just the best
sports
game ever. Like, wouldn't you like a simulator like Out of the Park or something instead of MLB The Show?
You could do that too.
Yeah.
Did you just... I've never played that game you played, but there's no way it's the best. Without me knowing anything.
MVP Baseball 2004 is the best sports video game of all time.
Punch-Out is
100%.
The
one with Manny Ramirez on the cover? Yes. It was very good. That's kind of the end of my baseball video game playing days.
Yeah, no, that's the best sports video game ever.
Yeah, maybe it is. I'll have to give it a shot. I'm a big RBI Baseball 1993 fan. And Punch Out,
that was
obviously.
RBI 93 with the grass cover.
Amazing.
That was the one I grew up on. I played that every morning for like 3 years.
That wasn't even the best sports game released in 1993. NHL 93.
I didn't like NHL.
It still holds up. I played it like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for the show. Thank you for the theme song, Doc and Dave. Thank you all for listening. Position previews next week. We're looking forward to it. Hope you all have a great weekend. And adios!